Leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire, Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd. PA Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Wick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Wick.
We're back. Hour two, about 5 minutes in, make it 8 minutes in, and James Scully joining us, and I guess he'll be joining us probably right here in this room Saturday. I won't be here, James, Saturday, but I imagine you. When are you coming on the morning show?
My first morning on the morning show will be next Monday. I'm on Monday and Tuesday, but I'm going to come up Friday morning and watch the works and hang out. So if you're there on Friday morning, I might run into you.
Oh, good. All right, we'll do the handicapping session live then on Friday. I wanted to take time today. You know, we're well out in front of it, and everybody can still get a lot of work done on this field, and people continue to familiarize themselves with the field. And one of the things that can help on that front is understanding what you're looking at, aside from just simply the running line from each of the races that they participated in. And when it comes to these Brisnet PPs, we've done this off and on for years, and it's worthwhile, because there's certain people that only maybe see them around Derby time, and some of the numbers kind of look like hieroglyphics to people, and there's important information that can be gleaned out of it, James, and I wanted you to kind of walk through. I put up the cut, I'm sure you saw it, with Epicenter's PP and then the race summaries in the two different styles, the rankings as well as the overall summary, and let's familiarize people with the BrisNet PP and what it's telling people.
Sure, yes. And, you know, there is a lot of information, but we'll just start right off with these ultimate pass performances. I sent you a link to the, you know, we have these pace ratings in there. We have E1, E2, and LP pace ratings, and then we have a speed rating. So basically the speed rating, you know, measures how fast the horse ran, you know, during the entire, you know, from start to finish. The E1 measures from the starting gate to the first call. The first call in sprints is typically 2 furlongs, and routes it's a half mile, 4 furlongs. The E2 measures how fast the horse ran from the start to the second call of the race. And then the late pace measures how fast the horse ran from the second call of the race to the finish line. So basically, we're, you know, showing you, basically giving you a rough gauge of whether the pace was, you know, moderate or fast or somewhere in between with the pace numbers.
And in terms of,
and how fast
those horses numbers
ran, yes. And in terms of the number, the higher numbers, the better. You know, we're basically, you know, one thing that you'll typically see is, like, you know, in past Derby winners, they come into these races, they have, like, good speed ratings. But another facet that, like, most Derby winners have is they're earning, like, triple-digit late pace ratings in their prep races leading up to the Derby. And there are, you know, a few exceptions. But for the most part, you know, the higher the number, the better. And you'll see speed horses as well. You know, there's certainly some examples in this year's race where, you know, a horse like Taiba, he raced up close to the lead in the Santa Anita Derby, and he got triple-digit E1, E2, late pace, and speed numbers. So, you know, it's just basically providing a gauge and, you know, can help, like, break down the pace scenario. We have a lot of horses in this year's Kentucky Derby field that have earned triple-digit E1 and E2 pace ratings, which would suggest that there's a possibility of a hot pace.
Let's look for a second and concentrate on Epicenter, just so that, you know, we can keep it focused. And looking at that Louisiana Derby line, the, you know, the E1 and 87, the E2 and 90, the late pace 106, and compare it to his efforts. I thought that Epicenter, you know, not only, you know, the most likely favorite, especially, in fact, we're going to discuss this with Andy Serling later, with the big bet that Jim McInvale is going to drop on Epicenter. That seemingly, I know people have been discussing whether maybe there's a chance that Zandon could, you know, become a Mojo favorite. It feels unlikely just because of Mattress Mack's money, that the impact of that kind of a bet. It feels like it's going to lock in Epicenter as the favorite. But compare, James, what he did in those two races, in the Lecompton and the Risen Star, when he was on the lead. And I want to compare those figures to what he then did and why it really kind of burnished his reputation coming into Derby, that he could rate comfortably and finish. And that kind of, you know, explain how he kind of changed from the Lecompte to the Risen Star to the Louisiana Derby using the numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, he ran in two main races. He ran in the Gunrunner Stakes in December. You can see, like, in just those run lines and his early pace ratings, he was forward in all three of his first three starts. But and his speed ratings were improving. He was getting faster. But, you know, by the time he got to the Lecompte, his speed had really become razor sharp. And his early E1 and E2 early pace ratings in both the Lecompte and Risen Star jumped into the triple digits. He was able to just clear from the starting gate and dominate those races early, at least in the Lecompte. You know, he got nailed late, but I thought he really moved forward off of the Lecompte to the Risen Star, and he just dominated that race on the front end. Now, in both races, he didn't finish particularly fast, whereby in the Lecompte he got an 84 relatively fast, 84 late pace number, and in the Risen Star he got an 89. So one thing about Epicenter that was a question mark was his tractability off of those, you know, fast wire-to-wire performances or fast front-running performances. And in the Louisiana Derby, he showed that versatility, you know, breaking from the starting gate. Joel Rosario took a hold of him, and he relaxed perfectly behind a pair of early leaders, and his E1 and E2 pace numbers declined. I mean, they're still solid, but they were 87.90. And then he finished full of run in the Louisiana Derby. He got a 106 late pace rating. That also translated to a career best triple digit speed rating. And just really just shows, you know, to me, a horse like Epicenter, you know, he still has speed. And, you know, I thought the Louisiana Derby was great because that really gives Joel Rosario options in the Derby. Even when these races appear to have multiple speed horses and you're expecting either a fast or contested pace, sometimes it just doesn't shake out that way. Sometimes these horses other speed horses don't get out of the gate or don't break running. And Joel Rosario will have the opportunity, I think, to get out there on the front end. And if nobody else is going, he could be showing the way and lead wire to wire with Epicenter. But if a hot pace does materialize, like many expect, he'll be able to settle like into a perfect trip just off the speed, similar trip to Louisiana Derby. And that really, you know, enhanced his credentials for, you know, for the race, Steve.
Let's then also answer what probably is mysterious to people a little bit. The 1C and the 2C, essentially a variant that is in between the late pace and the final speed figure.
Yeah, and those even break down more based on whether the pace was fast or slow. You can just see in those races, he was running fast compared to par in those races. He got a plus 15 in the LeCompte at the first call and a plus 9 at the second call. And, you know, those were fast performances. The Louisiana Derby was more moderate. He showed, you know, he relaxed more in the early stages, and those numbers were, you know, weren't slow, but they were like negative 3, negative 8.
And so when people are looking at those, you're essentially, those are creating or being worked off of a par?
Yes. Yeah, those are basically, yeah, absolutely. They're showing, like, compared to what's fast for that race, what was fast for that day in that race. If he had been running at par, he would have run a little, it would have been like a zero, and that would have been, you know, that wouldn't have, just the higher the faster they're going early, the lower the slower in a sense.
And then the final speed figure, in this case, the 101, if you're looking at the Louisiana Derby, that's not a pace influenced figure, correct? That's a pure speed figure on Brisnet.
Right, that's a pure speed figure on Brisnet, and obviously, you know, how fast they go in the early stages, you know, can influence, you know, the pace. I mean, can influence the final speed rating a little bit. Pace makes the race in a sense. But still, you know, this is a, you know, the Louisiana Derby, and you know, the pace wasn't, like, real moderate in there. Pretty good indication whereby, you know, like I said, he got a career best number. It's a triple digit number, which is really, you know, if you look at these benchmarks based on like speed ratings, you know, late pace ratings, you know, most Derby winners have triple digit numbers to their credit. And Epicenter, I thought really that Louisiana Derby was a, you know, it was just a real feather in his cap, just really showed like, you know, the versatility that he might need to win the Kentucky Derby.
Before we move to the summary pages, one thing from a pedigree standpoint, if you look above, for those that are looking at Epicenter right now, and I just sent out the full link to the complete Derby participant VPs. You do have two pedigree stats that are important, and I think a lot of people may gloss over, and that's the AWD, which is average winning distance of the sire and of the dam, and it's pretty notable. Of course, not this time. This three-year-old and all of his three-year-olds, that's first crop, so it's a number that is still evolving when it comes to a sire like Not This Time. But right now, his progeny, the average winning distance is 6.9 furlongs. Pretty notable number from the dam sire, which is Candy Ride, 7.1, which is a healthy number. And I know that BrisNet users that take average winning distance, not just BrisNet users, but anybody that looks at average winning distance as a statistic, that's a number that's important to people, especially when we start talking about, the spring and the classic season and horses stretching out to 9.5, 10, and 12 furlongs.
Yeah, definitely. And, with Not This Time, he's still a relatively younger sire. So, a lot of his early, when he had two-year-olds and his first couple of two-year-old crops, he had a lot of horses that were just running at sprint distances, and sometimes that can influence them. But once they get more crops in the thing, then, that number's certainly eligible. I think they continue to rise because he obviously he's got a couple of contenders in this year's Derby, or had a couple of horses that were up for it. I guess he has simplification as well as epicenter. That's right. So, but Gunrunner, he's 7.1, which is just outstanding. And I think these top class like sires, you look at like Tappet, he can throw sprinters or whatever, but he's going to have a higher number because he has so many top class long distance runners. He has 7.6. He's the sire of Charge It. And, sometimes the Derby, the mile and a quarter Derby, just for whatever reason, the first Saturday of May, has it fit right for Tappet's offspring so far. Obviously, last year he had Essential Quality, so he had a huge chance at it, and Essential Quality had a rough trip. But he's still searching for his first Derby winner. One thing I will point out about these pedigree stats that I think is a little interesting is that's included in these past performances is the sire stat for Mud. And typically, a lot of these sires, especially the top-class sires, they'll have, solid Mud numbers. I think any Mud number 15% or higher, is at least, satisfactory. But to me, there's a couple sires out there, and I'll point out one for sure, Empire Maker. Empire Maker has a SPI, basically SPI, which is in these PPs, to measures like the sire production index rating, a 1.00 means that's like average. That's the standard. Below 1.00, it's it's below average. Above 1.0 is, better, higher the better. And Messier's top class stallion, top class sire, but his Mud pedigree rate, Steve, is 12%. His offspring just aren't typically, aren't good on off tracks. And one thing about, and I'll give you another one, too, Giants Causeway, three-time leading sire. As great as he is, his Mud sire percentage rate is 14%, which is also going to be one of the lower ones in you'll see in the Derby field. One thing about their offspring, if they've run on an off-track and run well, then it isn't a concern for those horses. But a horse like Messier that doesn't have a start and off track, that's going to be a concern for me if the track isn't fast on Derby Day.
Well, you also have the flip side, which is a couple of numbers that are just garish, and that includes the Not This Time numbers as well as Gunrunner have got from limited opportunity, obviously, but numbers are nuts. 15 for 42 so far. I mean, that's a limited number, but it's an eye-opening percentage, at least early on here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and just his sire production index, 3.52. I mean, you know, it's a small sample size relative to other stallions, but you know, that's the highest number I've ever seen. That's like off the chart. I mean, if Cyberknife or Taiba win the Kentucky Derby, I don't think early voting's going, but if he does go, then that's a third runner for him in the field. You know, he's just going to reach a stratosphere, you know, from his first crop. That's just, you know, seems unattainable. I think it will really be something. You know, he set records last year for a freshman sire, and he's just incredible influence so far at stud.
Let's go to the race summary, because there's plenty of information here, most notably as we get a feel for the pace scenario. James Scully with us. We're looking at the information that you get at hand from Brisnet's PPs, and do we want to look at the probably better off starting with the overall summary before we do the top to bottom lists, the speed last race, back speed, current class. We'll save that for last. Let's go to the race summary, James, where if people are looking at it, the first column you see at the left is the days since the horse last ran, and then the running style. And this is a figure and a set of letters that people need to understand. The early or sustained explained the EPS ratings and then the numerical value.
Yeah, I basically look at the E and the EP. They're more either front runners or up close tracking, you know, have the tactical foot to stay, you know, within striking range from the start. P's are more like mid-pack stalkers, and S, which is E is early, EP's early presser, P is presser, which is like stalkers, more off-the-pace runners, but perhaps not dead closers. And then S's are one-run closers, horses that, you know, unless the pace is absolutely glacial or something, they're typically not going to be close to the lead in the early stages. And basically, you know, I think one thing about the pace, the recent history of the Kentucky Derby is a little bit is dependent on, you know, the horses that are in the race each year, how much speed is in the field. And to me, at face value, this race has like more speed than past runnings, you know, at least since 2013. But with that being said, a 20-horse field, whether it's 20 or 18 or 19, a big field like that, tactical speed, you know, is more important. It's just more difficult to pass, you know, a lot of horses, and the field can sometimes get a little bit strung out, which puts late runners further back than is preferable in horses. And that's why early pressers have had the most favorable run style in the Kentucky Derby, Steve. They produced a lot of victories by horses. There's been E-types that have won it as well. But, you know, basically EP-types have some tactical speed, and that's one run style that has been favorable in the Derby, at least over the last decade.
Well, and looking at the run style, the horses and these PPs will certainly be revised to include the Classic Causeway. I'm sure at some point if today they'll get a revision. But for our purposes, I've been telling people, if you're looking at you know, any pace projection right now, just substitute Classic Causeway for early voting. And in the race summary as it stands, you know, before yesterday, early voting was the only E. And now, essentially, Classic Causeway will be the only E. But after that, there's another 9 horses that identify as an early presser type.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, those horses, you know, I mean, you know, they're typically, if they're an early presser type, they're going to be able to race, like, within a few lengths of the lead, you know, and you know, that's a benefit in the Kentucky Derby. Now, some of those won't be able to sit there. I mean, you're not going to have Classic Causeway and whoever else out there winging on the lead and have 8 horses all within, you know, 4 or 5 lengths. So some of those horses just won't be able to work out the trip early, and their Kentucky Derby will be done early. But, yeah, a lot of horses in this year's field have that similar run style where they want to be not on the lead, but they definitely want to be up, you know, within striking distance. Heck, I even think some of the dead late runners, you know, you look at Zandon, and it's really easy to classify him as an F-type who's a one-run closer. But to me, you know, he wasn't that far back in the bluegrass, even though he was at the tail of the field. The field was all bunched up most of the way. And then another horse as well, like Barber Road, he has the look of a dead one run closer, but you know, he's shown some tactical speed before. And to me, he's more of a P, like ideally a P type. So early positioning is going to, it's so essential for so many of these horses, because, to me, you know, I look at horses like, Cyberknife and, Charge It. Two horses that have something going for them, Steve, but they're both like, ideally, they want to be sitting like 6th, 7th, 8th. They don't want to be sitting like 12th, 13th, 14th. And, you know, so that's a big part of the puzzle. I think the post positions are, you know, can be really key for a lot of these horses.
Explain the numerical value next to the run style.
The numerical value next to the... Oh, that's the querent points. Basically, the higher, the more speed type you are, the scale goes from 0 to 8, with 8 being the, you know, like a speedy type. You'll see early voting on here, Messier, Classic Causeway would be on here, even Pioneer of Medina, who has been forwardly placed in both the... you know, he was out there chasing Messi Epicenter in the Risen Star, and but he was coming off a couple front running performances, and then he chased in second in the Risen Star and chased in second in Louisiana Derby. So there's a horse, you know, he went. I mean, to me, he is an EP type, and if he's back in like 10th or 12th, he's done. He really needs sort of to get the trip ideally.
Well, and what this exercise does is it gives you a feel for where these horses would like to be under ideal circumstances. That'll be altered and affected, obviously, by the draw. And if suddenly, you know, you've got a bunch of speeds lined up outside, well, that actually benefits the mid-pack types and the closers that will be able to easily, you know, find a place to gain position while, you know, the speeds outside sort themselves down the stretch the first time before the turn. Let's fold in what is probably the columns, James, that are not so easily understood, and that's the pace speed section and how it differs from the speed that we talked about in the PPs. Explain that pace speed rating that follows the running style column.
That's like an average, like number four races that are at or close to the distance. So, you know, for the Derby, a little bit of that column is just going to be their last race, because a lot of these horses, you know, for Epicenter and Hill Hat and Pioneer Medina, since they're running a mile and an eighth and a mile and 3/16, they're basically averaging those together. But typically that's like, you know, for more for common distances that horses are running, you're getting an average of those. And, you know, so basically it's just going to be taking them for a mile and eighth races. So you can see, like, In Due Time and Major General at the bottom, who are on the A-list. They've only run at a mile and a 16th, so those weren't applicable for them. And then you have the international horses that don't have early pace ratings or speed ratings.
That gets us into the average, essentially, the average race rating overall of each of them, and then the best pace, the you know, the best early, middle, and late performances. And so that's not an average. That's their best individual performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Their best individual performance. And, You know, I mean, the one thing about it is, you know, a lot of these horses in the Derby are lightly raced. I mean, there's a lot of horses in the that are, you know, have five or fewer starts. It's basically showing their best performance. You know, it's you can you're I mean, to me, I'm looking at the field, and you know, it's a pretty solid bunch where, like, in their final speed, their speed one, SP1, SP2, SP3, SP4, it's showing their, that's like their last race, two races back, three races back, four races back. And, you know, a lot of these horses in the field have earned triple-digit numbers, which is real flattering to the Derby. By comparison, last year, three horses were tied for the highest Brisnet lifetime speed rating in the Derby field. And it was essential quality, highly motivated. Both got a 102 in the Bluegrass, and Rock Your World got a 102 in the Santa Anita Derby. So you can just see a lot of those horses last year didn't have triple-digit numbers in that SP1 column, and the three highest were, you know, all exiting a 102. This year's horses, you know, have run better in terms of speed ratings, run faster than last year's field. At least, you know, and there's a lot more depth to it as well. I think this year's field is pretty solid because, you know, there's some depth at the top.
Yeah, one thing to look at, I mean, given some of the horses that have experience versus Taba and, well, you know, Early Voting's not participating as far as we know, but Charge It, maybe another example. You're looking, you see horses that you know, had established a level and then, you know, maybe move forward, then maybe move back before moving forward again. There's a couple of horses here that are notable in their progression. Messier, who's gone from a 93 to 100 to a 104 to a 108, even in defeat, but he has improved with every start. And then jump down to Zandon, who equally has improved with every start, 88, 93, 94, 103. So, I mean, if you're looking for, you know, healthy progression, those two kind of jump off the page.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I look at, you know, I look at both of those horses, like a horse like Messier. You know, to me, he was a horse that I've been really impressed because he showed a lot of speed last year. He ran some good races and sprints, perhaps, you know, ran second a couple times. But his speed ratings have really increased as he stretched out to two turn distances in his last two starts. Or last three starts, and so that's really favorable for him, and that's the kind of progression you want to see. I mean, a little bit of it is also like how much more will they have to offer, and you know, I don't see whereby, you know, their progression is unsimilar. You know, other Derby winners I think have had a similar progression as well, and then had more to offer as well on the first Saturday in May. So they have something going for them for sure. One other thing I'll say is a couple of these horses, like Charge It, like, you know, he got a 98 two races back, and then he got a 94 in the Florida Derby. And for whatever reason, I thought he was rank in that race, and I thought he was rank throughout it. Didn't run, hit the gate at the start, didn't have his mind on business the whole way, and then obviously was in and out. But I if you're willing to give that race a little bit of a pass, you know, his race, two starts back, he got a 107 late pace rating. He got almost a triple digit speed rating. I mean, that horse is a horse that just on the last race numbers doesn't look too good. But I think, you know, an argument can be made that those races, that race two starts back, that maiden win, were more reflective of what he's capable of. And he needed that seasoning and experience in that Florida Derby. And those numbers are eligible to jump way forward off of that race. For a horse like Charge It.
In some of your most successful derbies, and I'm asking you this off the top of your head, and it's something you could come back to, you know, later in the week or next week. But you know, what have been some of your? I think about I'll Have Another, for instance. I mean, that you were so ahead of the curve on I'll Have Another. Maybe pick him out. Is there an area of, you know, in the PPs, in the figs, that you know, that pointed you at a, you know, a horse like him?
Well, for I'll have another. I was just, you know, to me, when I thought that the race, I thought that his first race of the year in the Robert Lewis was huge. He got a huge speed rating, and, you know, he was coming back off a big layoff, but he got like a triple-digit speed rating. He won by open length. But it was also a little bit of a case whereby that race, you know, he didn't have a real hard test in there. You know, he just crushed him. And he came back in that Santa Anita Derby, and I thought it was a perfect prep. He had to gut out a nose win, but that provided, like, the toughness in a sense. And he was also a horse that I liked his Santa Anita Derby, even though it came back a little bit slower. I think Orb was a little bit the same way, where when he won the Fountain of Youth, that race was a real tough, hard race. And then he sort of rolled in the Florida. He did it actually the opposite way, and he rolled in the Florida Derby. But they both had a hard race that set him up for the Derby. And I just thought he left a favorable impression, too, like in the workouts coming up to it. I saw him train a couple times, or at least, you know, one morning out there at Churchill, and the horse looked like he was doing good out of the race. And, you know, like I've said this before about these horses coming into the race, but, you know, I think it is, like, important just to, you know, like, try to, you know, keep tabs on how they're doing. Some horses, I think, like, last year was a perfect example. I wanted to like Essential Quality a little bit in the Derby and think he was, you know, he was going to get it done for Tappet and everything. But I didn't like the fact how he was working, where he was getting outworked by those, like, slower workmates. And I knew he was a dull workhorse, but I just sort of questioned a little bit. And, you know, and I wound up, like, using him as a B and picking Hot Rod Charlie. And I'm a little bit the same way this year, Steve, where there's about three or four horses that I like a lot, and I'm still trying to, like, keep an open mind and keep tabs on them, how they're coming up to the race. And obviously the numbers and the figures and the replays, I've done a lot of work on that, but I'm still trying to make my final decision.
Well, let's fill out the rest of the race summary charting, the ACL, explain that to average, and then we've got the average speed, and then the last three starts as well, the speed portion of the evaluation.
Yeah, the you know, basically speed last race. I mean, that's the kind of thing where, you know, obviously it is what it is, but I mean, it is pretty good. Just gives you a quick sense. Back speed is their career best, but it has to be at or close to the distance. Current class, that's like an NA for these because of the mile and a quarter distance. That's more like at the distance today. The average class, class three, is just taking their last three class ratings, averaging them together, giving you the figure. The prime power, that's basically like an algorithm we developed that takes into our speed, our class, our pace, you know, puts a whole, like, all as many information into that, and comes up with one figure, the higher the better. And you know, so that's a race. That's a number that's relative to each horse in each race based on their complete past performances. So horses like Crown Pride at Summer is Tomorrow, they're the only NAs in the prime power in the field, and that's just because they've been running in international races.
Sure. Well, and we'll walk back through this and look at each, you know, look at each one, because this final cut shows you from top to bottom. Speed last race, Mo Donegal, Venteba, and Early Voting, all 111s, Messier 108. I mean, obviously there's horses like Skippy Longstocking that are included here because they're on the leaderboard list, and the PPs include everybody. But then Zandon, Epicenter, you know, these are all the triple-digit speeds last race. Tis the Bomb and Smile Happy. Then what's the differentiation on back speed in terms of how many races does it go back, and why would there be any differential? Or is it?
Well, it's more, you know, some of these columns, you know, you're going to get them, you know, for every single race. And, you know, I mean, if you're having like a two-year-old maiden race, they might have a lot of NAs, horses don't have experience. And it, with the Derby being a mile and a quarter and none of these horses run at the distance, that's why typically a lot of these numbers are just going to be taken for one race. They're one start at a mile and an eighth they made. I will point out one thing real quick about the just because I was thinking about this with the current class and average class and such. In the PPs, we do have two columns of numbers that right before the race type, there's an RR column, and that's the race rating. And that measures the overall quality of the horses in the race. The higher number, the better, the tougher the competition, et cetera. And then after the race type, we have a, before the E1, it's a CR, and that's the class rating, which measures the horse's actual performance, you know, at that level against the horses he ran against in the race. So, you know, basically an RR showing, like I said, the overall quality of the field. One thing about the RRs, I think the CR has more value because sometimes the RRs can be a little bit influenced by field size, whereby you can have a lot of bad horses in a field. It could just be top heavy, and those bad horses might drag it down. But you're still getting a quick look, a quick indication of the company they've been running against. And, you know, these numbers have, you know, value at any level, with stakes horses or, you know, bottom-level
sure.
claimers.
Back to the columns and that average class. I mean, how is the class number, what is that algorithm? How is, quote-unquote, class evaluated?
Well, the average class, it's measuring like their class ratings from just from their last three starts, I believe. It's just averaging them together
yeah.
from their last three starts. So I mean, it's just giving you one figure, and it's just giving you an indication. I mean, it looks like McGonagall, you know, he's got you know, two top class efforts and stakes. You know, a race like the Withers is a good example, running early in the year. That race is going to continue to get inflated from a race rating and class rating perspective by the performances of how these horses run down the road. You know, like it's like a two-year-old stake. That race will be sort of measured on how those horses perform. And, you know, when you have like horses like Uno, who runs second and then goes and wins the Rebel, and even the third place finisher ran like second in the Tampa Bay Derby. Those kind of performances, flatter early voting.
This is interesting because that you look at who's involved in here, and it essentially Epicenter, Zandon. I was going to say, is it completely favoring Louisiana and the Wood, but it's not. It seems like, and of course some of these horses moved around a little bit around the country, because essentially the class rating is taking a snapshot of the quality of, you know, of the preps.
Right. Absolutely. And you know, I think it's, you know, I can just take a quick look at the average class rating and draw a question about, like, the Arkansas Derby, because I can take a look down there and I can see the top two finishers from that race, Cyberknife and Charge It. They're not in the top 10 of the field. So that's a race whereby, I'm not saying those horses couldn't run well in the Derby, but I think that was, you know, a case could be made of at least like the domestic preps. Let's just say the non-synthetics, leaving the UAE Derby and the Jeff Ruby out of the other six races, a case could be made on the numbers that the Arkansas Derby was the weakest field in terms
yeah.
of quality that there was.
Well, and you're also dealing, because of the lightly raced aspect of a lot of this field, in some cases you're
exactly.
talking about a third start being a two-year-old start. The Remsen is in here for a horse like Mo Donegal's at the top of this list, and his third effort was the Remsen. So the Remsen, the Holy Bull, and the Wood, and then Messier, and I think Messier's is probably the race at Los Al. Yeah, the Los Al Futurity is in there with the Lewis and the Santa Anita Derby. So, some of the races that have been talked about, particularly the Remsen, obviously, with what the Remsen has produced.
And then even with the third in the Holy Bull, you know, Wide of Ario coming back and winning the Florida Derby flatters that performance.
And Simplification. Simplification winning
the Fountain of Youth. Second, yeah. So, yeah, it's no surprise to me. I mean, there's a horse that, Zandon obviously really flattered that Remsen winning the Bluegrass and running third in the Risen Star. And, he's running tough races, Mo Donegal, he has. And he got big numbers for the Wood Memorial. One thing about his race in the Wood Memorial, he was saving ground on the inside, which looked like the best part of the track. And that track, produced some fast times. But he still had to rally from off the pace. None of those horses that were running fast times, were like more than a length off the lead after a half mile. So he was like eighth at that point. And that was a pretty monster effort.
The last three columns, and you did touch on Prime Power. Prime Power, I know some people, with the first thing they look at on BrisNet are the Prime Power numbers, and it basically is a distillation of everything else, shuffling the deck of everything else that has been discussed. Then
I'll just clear up that Prime Power.
Yep.
The Prime Power is basically computed for each race, every single race when it's the field's drawn, at the distance, at the level. So it's taken in, as well as just the straight-up numbers, like speed and class numbers and such. It's taken a look at form and weight and distance and other factors as well. So, yeah, that's the one that we like to pump because, BrisNet tabs it, touts it as our best rating.
Well, and then the two columns and my for years my system, quote unquote, when I'm looking at the Briz numbers, the early pace and late pace, and I'm always interested to see if there's a horse that is in the front third, essentially, James, of the early pace and like in the top quarter of the late pace. A horse that has had enough speed to attend paces, but then has got finish. And this rank top to bottom will also, at a glance, give you an idea, much like the pace projector that Timeform offers, and also Jerry Brown has got, his opening quarter figures, giving you an idea of, who's going to be on or near the lead, and it feels like it's pretty well documented that the horses you see at the front of this on the early pace, they're the most logicals to be setting the pace and attending it here.
That's true, but I will say this about Simplification. He's high there, but I mean, I'm a little intrigued by like the whole strategy of Antonio Sano off of that Fountain of Youth. And he talked about it after the Florida Derby. He was like, "We're going to send him to the Florida Derby. We're going to get a really hard race. If he gets beat, tired, so what? That will move him forward for the Derby." And I think that was a pretty interesting strategy where, he's going to be back sitting seventh or eighth in the Kentucky Derby, and they're going to be using completely different tactics. Perhaps that's like, one thing about you always have to keep in mind is, hey, will these horses have more to offer off their last race? And I think a horse like Simplification, he might still not be fast enough to win, but I think he's a horse you could say, yes, he looks like he'll have more to offer.
Well, and some of this is circumstance. And we talked yesterday with Mike Welch, and simplification has come up repeatedly, being maybe a little bit against the racetrack in the Florida Derby. And given the way he ran and the circumstances that he found himself in the Fountain, I called him yesterday with Mike. I called him Epicenter Light. He's a horse that has shown the ability to attend a pace and win. And then when the occasion arose, and he found himself, you know, further back than he would have expected, he dealt with it and got, you know, a very helpful ride from Jose Ortiz in the Fountain and was able to win. So, you know, he's a horse that, like Epicenter, has run well under two different circumstances, and that's a nice experience to have. I mean, when we talk about the difference between horses like what Epicenter has been through and accomplished and Simplification has versus a horse like Charge It and Taba that are making, you know, their third and fourth starts and you know, haven't encountered. I mean, even got to include Messier to a degree in the West Coast horses that have been dealing with small fields. You know, this is a whole different circumstance, and it's one thing, let's say, to, you know, sit seventh and pass five or six horses versus sitting, you know, 14th and passing 12 or 13 of them. And, you know, this is where, you know, experience counts a lot. And, yeah, there's been miraculous rides and miraculous performances that, you know, no straw appeared in anybody's path. When you think about Super Saver and Mind That Bird and Street Sense, but it's not that often, or even Orb, you know, coming from virtually last and passing everybody on a sloppy track. So to me, this is one of those things that, you know, gives you, you know, if you get behind a certain horse with a certain approach or expectation, it you know, having gone through different challenges, it helps. I mean, it's not a, you know, it's not an idle conversation point.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, I look at a horse like Zandon. You know, I thought in the Remsen, you know, he had a little bit of a rough trip in the stretch where Mo Donico came over and bumped him. And then in the Risen Star, he broke slowly and traveled real wide. And, you know, and then in the Bluegrass even, you know, he was really like eighth most of the way, but he got shuffled back to like 11th on the far turn, 11th and last. So, you know, there's a horse that, I mean, I thought in the Bluegrass it was great because he's just, in every race, he's like encountered at least slightly adverse circumstances. And he's been able to keep, you know, improving and, you know, he's a horse to me that, has the ability to like overcome, who's adaptable enough to overcome some trouble. And, he got that experience that should tough him up for the Derby, because one thing about the Derby, there's a lot of bumping and rough riding in there. If you're not on the front end, you better be able to handle some adversity.
Well, and you know, there's also an interesting sidebar to the size of horses, where, you know, you'll hear people say, "Oh, look, you know, big and strapping, and covers so much ground." Well, that's fine, unless you're a horse that gets checked up and it takes you, mm-hmm. you know, a 16th of a mile to get back up to speed. And then there's, you know, the smaller, more nimble horse that, if he checks up, a couple of jumps and he's right back into stride. So there's, you know, there's all these, nuances that come into play. Is there, James, as we wrap up, is there a number, particularly the late pace, that is, you know, typically necessary that have been demonstrated that wins derbies more than others, more often?
Yeah, I mean, at least like a, yeah, I mean, I, but Every horse in that like that has like won the Derby has earned like at least an 86 late pace rating in their last Derby in their last start, like going back to, you know, like 15 years ago or something. Most horses have earned, like I said, a triple digit number in either their last start or the next to last start. Both those races are, you know, important. I think that the last start has a little bit more value because it's at a mile and an eighth, but it's still a building process. And like I said, like horses like I'll Have Another and Orb, they actually ran better races in their next to last prep on number wise than they did in their final prep. So I'm always giving weight. I'm not putting too much importance just on the last prep. I'm looking at the last two and analyzing the numbers primarily from that perspective, Steve.
Very good. Well, I mean, from what you're seeing, who do we expect? Who do we expect on the front end? What kind of a makeup do you see in the first front third?
Well, I see in the front third, first off, I'll mention two horses to me that they got to get out of the gate. If they don't get out of the gate, they're in trouble. And even if they get out of the gate, I don't know how long they can stick around. But they're both E-types. Summer is tomorrow. He was a 6-furlong, 7-furlong sprint type that set the pace
right
in the B. Pinehurst New A Derby. He's going to be out there. Classic Causeway is the other one. I don't see either one of them, lasting too long if they do get out there. The other ones that are just E-types to me, you have to put Messé in that group. I think John Velasquez is the best at getting these horses. You know, he had Medina Spirit on the lead last year. He led Wire to Wire with Authentic 2 years ago. He's a good shot for a speed horse like Messé. I got Epicenter as well. I think that, like I said, if he settles in the second or third, that would be probably ideal, but he's going to be showing, I think, speed from the gate. And a little bit of a wild card is that Zozos. You know, he set the pace of that Louisiana Derby. He's a horse that looks like he's thriving right now in preparation. Big, long, striding colt that looks like he's built for longer distances. And I just think that, he's going to be forward. And he's another one that, for a little bit of a wild card, he could be challenging for the lead, I think, Zozos. So those would be the five I would put in the early category, Steve, for the Derby.
Interesting. All right. When we talk later in the week, we'll keep working our way through the field as well, and there may be some definitive answers that come in the next few days. There's still some... Still some rumblings, and James, I've already got a couple of emails, people finding the information helpful, and if they're looking at the BrizNet, I put the link up there on Twitter to get the complete set so you can continue to get familiar and start to get an image of how this race unfolds in your mind, and I'll see you on Friday.
Sounds good, Steve. Thank you.
I really appreciate it. James _Scully111 on your Twitter. There you go. There's your primer to the BrizNet PPs. There's a lot of good information in them. And now it's a question of knitting it all together over the next week plus. Let's take a break here. Top of the hour. Andy Serling is going to join us next. I know that Andy's thinking about Derby more than usual. I was talking to him yesterday, actually, after the show, and He's already getting organized for the videos that he'll do for the Oaks and Derby. Andy Serling, and of course it's Belmont opening day, Thursday. So we'll get some Belmont in too. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick.
Experience the all-new Paddock Suite at Saratoga Racecourse. Available for groups of up to 80 guests, the venue features a climate-controlled lounge overlooking the Saratoga Paddock. Visit naira.com/Saratoga to book your group outing today.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally